when you're riding after rattlesnakes, you gotta be tough. You gotta be rough. You gotta shoot straight. Be on the lookout. The James Gang is back in town, and they're meaner than ever. There's Brother Eli. He stomped down many a snake in his day, and he ain't done yet. His younger brother Dave, quicker than a horned toad, he can hunt down a snake's lie. Then there's Sister Jean. She can whip out a scripture faster than a Colt 45. Wanted, dead or alive, they'll be coming for you. It's the James Gang on GearFolkRadio.com.
The insanity continues. The insanity of Jewish control of world governments. And it ain't going to get any better anytime soon. The good thing, David, Brother David James, is that the Jews are always the authors of their own destruction. Okay? It has always been this way in the past, and it will be this way right now, because we know that their attempts to brainwash the entire planet, which have nearly succeeded in brainwashing everybody except the remnant, are beginning to fail. And the brainwashing techniques that they've been using on their libtard college students are creating such a mass of uninsightful, uneducated people you can't even have an intelligent conversation with, libtards, that even the feminists actually believe that Islam is somehow empowering women.
Empowering them to be raped.
Exactly.
They weren't able to be raped before legally. Right. Now it's empowering them to be raped.
Talk about rape culture. Right. How can these people really be as stupid as they act like? Well, they must be, because they wouldn't be out in public doing these things and saying these ridiculous things if they really weren't that stupid. But they are that stupid, folks. So that's the good news. The stupidity of it all is going to bring the whole system down, especially when there are, let's put it this way, putting white people, competent white people, out of work and hiring libtards in their stead. This means that whatever company you run, it's going to be staffed by idiots. Those idiots are going to drive your company into the ground. Just like in Mexico. Mexico is such a narco state that the recent statistic I had, that over 175,000 people in Mexico have been knocked off by the narco state in the last 10 years. Now you get some idea why Mexicans are fleeing Mexico. All right. But it's not our responsibility. The people of Mexico need to have their own revolution, get rid of the narco state, and have a republican form of government. It's not our responsibility to take their refugees, who are nothing. And by the way, Barack Obama and Eric Holder were upholding the narco state by giving them guns. I mean, actual guns and money, too.
Automatic weapons, by the way, not just pistols like they want to take away from Whitey.
Yeah. So this is true insanity, absolute true insanity. Okay. So today's subject is going to be the Jewish war against Germany. And of course, it's a continuation of our series on Germany between the Versailles Treaty and World War II. Okay, with emphasis more now on World War II, because we really did a lot of the history, although we never have done an actual analysis of the Versailles Treaty itself. And I know you want to do that, David, so eventually we'll do that.
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, you know why I want to do that? Because when I discovered the first time we opened the thing, I discover that the League of Nations has now been instituted.
That's right.
Under the noses of the whole world.
Mm-hmm. At the Versailles Treaty.
I mean, I'm sure the countries that supposedly, you know, that participated in it, the officials knew it, but I don't think it was put out into the news that any League of Nations was begun. I don't know.
No, well, that was a surprise they sprung on everybody. Yeah. Right, a one-world government, because that's the Jewish aim all along, is to have a one-world government in which they can manipulate all political leaders in one spot, right? Get them all together, tell them what to do, right? And that's all the United Nations is about. It's not about representing nations. It's about controlling nations from the top by the international Jewish banksters. That's all it's about, okay? So, this one article you put up, why did France and Britain let Germany violate the Treaty of Versailles after World War II? Well, I think the real question is, why was the Versailles Treaty so punitive against the innocent German people?
Well, we know why. I can answer that for you if you'd like me to.
Go ahead.
It's because Germany must perish. That's
right.
Why. Mm-hmm. That's exactly why. That whole campaign was coming from Morgenthau. Was coming from the Hutten Plan. They were good. You know, the Hutten Plan talks about breeding the Germans out.
Mm-hmm.
You just bring in what's the Hutten Plan is what's taking place in Germany today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, you bring in all these people and you breed them out.
Right.
And so they've even got the women over there. That's why I call these women enemies. And they're running around with signs, "Welcome refugees."
Right.
I mean, come and breed us out.
Right. Exactly. Well, these are the stupid feminist libtards that we started the show about, right? It's amazing that these women can't see that Islam enslaves women. How can they not
What's
see
even
that?
More amazing about women is, how do women not see that feminism, when they have the feminist women leaders around the nation, that those feminist women leaders do not care about the women of the nation?
That's right. No, they're
manipulating. Whether they're feminist or not feminist.
Right. They don't care for any of them. All they care about is power and manipulating other women to maintain that power, right? And, of course, there's a smattering of males in the so-called feminist movement as well. But there's a whole bunch of male libtards running around promoting all of this Islamic homophobia, you know, the same agenda that the feminists have been promoting. There's a lot of men involved in it, too. So there's as many stupid libtard men as there are women. But in my opinion, the liberal men, most of them are simply in the movement because they figure that these libtard women are easy, right?
Or they love dominant women.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, you know, that can be a lot of fun, you know,
yeah,
once
right.
in a while, but
yeah.
It, you know, that's not full time, you know what I mean?
You could
add a little excitement to the bedroom
right.
arena, maybe playing
right.
that kind of a scenario once in a while, but when it becomes,
right?
You know, when it's fantasy, it's okay, but when it's reality, it's
yes,
a little ridiculous.
Right. A little sadomasochism for you kids, right?
Well, you know. Like, you know, female dominant. You know,
sure.
They showed that, if you didn't realize that, they showed that whether it was on Lost in Space, so you could see that as a child.
Right.
Or
sure.
They would have these 50 sci-fi movies where men would land on these planets where women ruled and the
right.
men were slaves.
Right. Yeah.
That's well, you know, that's a sexual fantasy that the Jews promoted in Weimar Republic in Germany. The
That's
Weimar
right.
Republic that was a democracy, by the way.
Right, right. Democracy. Amen. Okay, democracy is the bane of civilization. Anyway, Harold Kingsburg states, oh, wait a minute, answering the question. It says three answers. Let me repeat the question. Why did France and Britain let Germany violate the Treaty of Versailles after World War II, or World War I, rather? Now, of course, that's the wrong question, is why did the Versailles Treaty punish the German people for a war that was started by France and Britain? Right?
And I answered the question. Mm-hmm. Well, the question is, is that we, the whole premise on the World War One, World War Two was, again, answering the question that Germany was the last bastion of Europe. It was the last thing needed to be conquered, the last country. It was to destroy Christianity. This would ensure that that there would be able to be nobody else to stand up against the Jews, because right. we know that the Jews have the USA under control at this point, and we have the UK, and we have Russia, which is under Jewish control at this point, right? Mm-hmm. So the only one who would be powerful is the tribe of Judah. And they would be the only one that could stand up. I mean, they practically beat the world. They would have beat the world. If Hitler was in tune with the fact that we were what we know about us being the true Israelites, and he was using the name of Yahweh, I'll bet you they would have won the thing, even if America popped in.
Right. Yeah. Yeah,
that was the one little thing there. It's just too bad that he didn't know that, the Germans didn't know that. But you see, the Germans had to go. This is what the whole penchant is, the whole thing is against the tribe of Judah, to destroy the tribe of Judah. You know that the Jews aren't in, they don't care about destroying Zebulun. They don't care about destroying, they care about destroying the tribe of Judah.
The kingly tribe, yes, yes, amen. All right, so
That's because, remember, I'm sorry, but that's because they always take the highest seat. This was the thing I told you that Yahweh revealed to me,
right?
That they make the mistakes on taking the highest seat. Yeah. So they wanted the seat. You know, all the other tribes have disappeared now, and God can't find them anywhere because he's just not capable. He needs the rabbis to tell him what happened to those tribes. He doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, but the tribe of Judah wants the scepter, they want the crown, and they want the whole thing. They're the king of tribes, and they're the only tribe that's left.
Yeah.
And so when I talk like that, is that how that nationalist got to the point? There's a guy sitting talking next to you, and he knows the truth, that the Jews are the tribe of Judah. that's where he must have got it from. The guy's cuckoo.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Jews aren't any of the tribes.
That's
right. That's all I have to say, Eli, is they sucker themselves in by their own things that make them fail. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're just prone to failure.
Here's a situation, the Jewish con game. Let's say the guy's got a con game going, and he has sucked in the whole neighborhood. Well, unfortunately, some of the neighborhood includes his relatives. Right? And his own relatives are getting sucked in, and they realize, hey, wait a minute. This is my Jewish brother-in-law who's running this con. We want our money back, right? So they're starting to cheat each other, and they don't even know it, right? So this house of cards is getting ready to collapse, folks. It's collapsing before our eyes. Anyway, Harold Kingsberger says, there was very, very little appetite for war in France and Great Britain following the First World War. Although the First World War has generally been overshadowed by the Second World War in the public imagination, World War I was a massive conflict. The British lost roughly 890,000 soldiers. The French lost about 1.4 million soldiers. By contrast, the French saw 218,000 soldiers killed in World War II, and the British lost 384,000. Okay, so they lost loads more men. Now, what race were these men, David?
That they lost?
Yeah. These were white men.
Who?
France and Britain.
All wars lost white men. There was they might have had a Jew there in Vietnam, or they might have had a few black people in Vietnam.
Right.
Or even in the Civil War, there were a few black people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But generally speaking, all wars, white men have been lost.
That's right. But historians never mention the fact that this has been a slaughter of the white race. But that would detract from the 6 million myth that they have to tout, by their Jew sponsors, right? So we can say, how many more millions of white soldiers were lost in these wars above and beyond the so-called 6 million Jews, and then you add the white civilians in World War I and World War II, we're talking, 60 million, 100 million white people?
How about if we just say this, two-thirds of our race.
There you go. There you go.
Because if you want to call ritual murder, child ritual murder sacrifice part of the game, remember that even though they got that going legally onto the abortion tables, you got 300,000 children a year missing in America, never mind all worldwide in the UK, etc. So yeah. This is a satanic war against – it's not just the Jews, the satanic Jews, but it's also any satanic groups that are sacrificing the children, whether it be Pizzagate, whether it be, you know, over there in the UK, those scumbags, which most of them turn out to be Jews anyway, Jimmy Savile and all that stuff. That's a war against us as well.
That's
not the kind of war where we're fighting with guns. That's a war where, with innocent victims that can't even help themselves.
Right, right. It's a part of the sexual war against the white race. Again, absolutely. Run by Jews. It's the international Jewish mafia that's behind virtually all pornography, virtually behind all of pedophilia, etc. Okay? This is a Jewish enterprise, folks. It's part of Mystery Babylon, the commercial empire of the Jews in these last days. It's so obvious to those of us in identity. We can see this very clearly. But the rest of the world is trained to look otherwhere. And other places besides Jewry, which is the true cause of all this river of pollution. Okay? He continues, the fight also tore up massive sections of northern France, doing considerable damage to France's industrial capacity, to the point where at the end of World War I, the victory memorabilia sold in Paris had been made in Germany. I had never heard of that. That's interesting. Additionally, by the 1930s, the terms of the Versailles Treaty were increasingly coming under scrutiny. The hyperinflation and the Papiermark in the Weimar Republic had led to restructuring of the reparations payments, which opened the door to renegotiating other sections of Versailles. Well, now why were these sections of Versailles being renegotiated? Because they were way too harsh to begin with. That's the obvious reason. Okay. Having said that, in general, France did oppose German violations of the treaty. Well, if the treaty was too harsh, it's really difficult to say Germany's objections to it as being violations thereof, okay? The whole Versailles Treaty was a violation of Germany. Albeit in pretty toothless ways, the remilitarization of the Rhineland caused a firestorm of protests from France, and the French had initially not been of a mind to allow the German annexation of the Sudetenland. However, the French were not willing to engage in military operations without the backing of the British. Okay, so we're talking about the British Rothschilds again. In the case of the former incident, the British mostly thought it was perfectly acceptable for the German army to go anywhere in Germany it liked. In the case of the latter, the ethnic German majority in the Sudetenland made it seem like a matter of ethnic self-determination, which it was. Who took the land away from the German people, the Sudetenland? Who took the Danzig Corridor away from the German people and created a nation called Poland and created a nation called Czechoslovakia, which neither of which existed before the Versailles Treaty?
You know, what's interesting, too, about that is before they tried to buy the little land of Palestine.
Right.
Maybe, I doubt it, but that was one, if you want to think about that, it just dawns on me. There's your turning point in history. Now, had the Palestinians sold them that land, there might not have needed to be a World War I and II. I'm not sure, but. There would still need to be death of the white race, no doubt about it. But you know what I'm trying to say to you, that maybe that might have changed all of history at that point.
It might have, but we know that even though the Jews have taken control of Palestine since 1948, there hasn't been a moment's peace there since 1948.
Well, I don't mean it to change history that way. They're never going to have a land of their own, no matter how they got it. If they bought it, it's still not
Yahweh,
even theirs.
Maybe that's why
they weren't allowed to buy it. Maybe Yahweh said if they bought it, it would be theirs, and he wouldn't allow it.
That's right. That's right.
The way it is.
Well, that land is forbidden to them by Yahweh. Okay, they will not inherit. They will not have a nation. They are not a nation. They are, as the curse of Cain says, vagabonds, and you know, and roaming around the world looking for a home, and they'll never find one because Yahweh has cursed them. That's all there is to it. They will never have a land of their own, even though they think that Palestine is theirs. It will never be theirs.
They only occupy it.
Yeah, right. They're just they're what's it called? They're itinerant stragglers. It's also worth keeping in mind that France and the UK were still very much in the grips of the Great Depression at that time. We see we talked about this last time, that the Great Depression changed the game, the power structure, and the ability of these various nations controlled by Jews to affect politics around the world was lessened by this Great Depression. Okay? And this was caused by the Jews in the first place. So, in other words, by creating this Great Depression, they lessened control over those nations. You know, if nations are in starvation mode and everybody's out of work, you know, what are you going to do? You know, well, what they should do is print more money. That's when you need to print more money and make work job programs. But even the ones created by Roosevelt hardly had any kind of impact on the Depression. Why? Because the Jews extracted all of the money out of circulation, so trade was impossible. Okay? So the way the Jews control society is by pulling money out of circulation and putting money into circulation. And who is the only guy in Europe, in fact, the only political leader in the world, who actually put money into circulation? Is our good old friend Adolf. Right?
So at that time, yeah.
Right? So he
and they couldn't kill him. He's the only one. There's something right there.
Right.
He's the only one that did it, and they couldn't kill him.
That's right. They couldn't. Well, that's why they started World War II, is to get rid of him. Right? That's and but they turned it into a war because you know as well as I do that they wanted to kill off as many white people as possible. You know, if they're going to have a war, let's kill as many white people as possible. Now, that's the way these Jews think, right? So, the Great Depression caused a major shift in policies all over Europe. Voters in the two countries wanted jobs, not foreign policy exercises, okay? All right? So, the people of the various nations of Europe, hey, we want work. I don't care about what's going on in Germany. I want work. Last, Nazi Germany was viewed as a potential bulwark against the expansion of communism from the Soviet Union. The West had backed the whites in the Russian Civil War, and that was something of a high point for relations between the West and Bolsheviks until Operation Barbarossa. Operation Barbarossa, isn't that where they exterminated?
That's when they went into Russia.
Oh, okay. When the Germans went into Russia.
Yep, and it was Operation Torch when they went into Africa.
Oh, okay. All right. So the Soviet Union had proven to have an expansionist goals. That's for sure. The Polish-Soviet War of 1919 to 1921 had done that, and the French and British wanted an ally for when the shinola hit the fan. Germany was a credible ally, so some leeway was given. Okay, all of these things are plausible, the things that he says here, okay? But he obviously is not privy to Rothschild's plans for, you know, changing the racial face of Europe, okay? So on the side bar here, was the 1919 Treaty of Versailles the main cause of World War II?
Was it the main cause? It attributed to all. Yes, it is,
yes,
I would say it's the main cause. However, before the Treaty of Versailles, World War II was set up.
Oh yeah,
it was definitely set up when World War I ended. The Jews knew. The Germans might not have known, but the Jews knew they were going back to war. And you see, that's what the Versailles Treaty and all these things did, is it gave them time to build up their forces.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, yes. they had lost, they knew they lost bad, and they got their tails whipped in World War I. So they needed to waste some time And I mean, you know, like time between the wars.
Right.
I know this is just something nobody talks about, but it just makes sense. And they knew they were going to go through this for a second time. That's why they put the treaty in there, because this would cause the aggravations that would bring it in. But they wasted some time there and made sure that behind the scenes they were building up the American military, they were building up the Russian military, they were building up the UK's military, and they were also, you know, doing things on the borders of both sides through that treaty of Germany, which mm-hmm. really aggravated the Germans. That's the Versailles Treaty, but you know, that was that's the problem with everything. That's what caused it. That's what was the thorn that kept on pricking over and over and over and over.
Yes, yes. So this is absolutely true. The Treaty of Versailles was the main cause of World War II, because it established all of the injustices that Germany had to endure until National Socialism came on the scene. Okay? The Versailles Treaty was such a, and we did an entire show about history's most terrible peace, right, which is the Versailles Treaty, which was so punitive against the German people and so unjust against Germany that it could not possibly remain in place. It just couldn't, okay? You can't have that kind of, it's just, actually it reminds me of, because I talked about it this morning, Reconstruction in the South. That was so unjust toward the South, especially after they had established their statehood for 2 years after the Civil War, for these radical abolitionists from the Northeast to come and say suddenly, oh, you're no longer states now. We undo what happened right after the Civil War, and we're declaring you a military-occupied state. Well, that's what Germany was after the Versailles. It was a militarily-occupied state by the Jews. Okay? Very similar circumstances, okay? I remember doing these other two last time, but here, Mike Farkash Slovak, and sometimes you get your best comments from non-Americans because the American people have been so brainwashed. I remember we definitely read Vietni Puvan, the Buddhist, from talking about the injustices of the Versailles Treaty. But Mike Farkash says, very briefly, France and Britain let Germany get away with what it did, such as increasing navy size, gaining Czechoslovakia, etc., because essentially they thought Germany would stop there and not expand further. Well, I think there's more to it than that. I think it's basically bureaucratic incompetence on the one hand, the fact that the Great Depression was affecting these countries so much, and because, as you pointed out, the master plan going all the way to Albert Pike was to have three world wars, okay? And the Second World War, the First World War accomplished the destruction of monarchies. The Second World War was to establish communism globally. And the Third World War was to pit Islam against Christianity, which we are seeing happening right now.
When all three of them were to establish the little land of Palestine over there for the Jews.
Yes.
And not to mention the UN. That's the goal of everything. It was back from 1815 where it was generated. See, when the Jews want something, and once it's there and they want it, they're going to keep going until they get it. And yeah. What's interesting is it didn't take long. I told you it's a 5-year period just to set up for the World War I. It probably they started the bank runs in 1907, mm-hmm. Which aggravated the people and said it was the problem reaction solution. We have a problem. What the answer is we want the Federal Reserve. So what we need to do is create bank runs and problems in banks.
Right.
And then we have the solution ready for you when you cry out to it. So I don't think the people really cried out for it because they had to sneak it in. But as you can see, it didn't take long to set up for World War One. All they had to do was get that Federal Reserve Act in.
Right,
and while they were doing it, they slipped in, as we keep saying, the ADL and the IRS, which they would implement during World War II. They would implement it on the on the places like the Air Force bases and the District of Columbia and et cetera like that, but not in the general public, because that's where that IRS is only to be taken taxes out of. Is if you work for the government, if you are a senator, if you are a military man, those are the ones that have that are supposed to pay that federal tax, not your general citizen. That's what it was put in. That's the only place they have the jurisdiction to do that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it took a very little time for them to set that up. Then it took more time to set up World War II, because they knew that if they didn't strengthen themselves, as I said, I'm repeating myself, they knew they had to do that. But look how long it's taken to bring in World War III.
Yeah, right.
1945 all the way till 2016.
Yeah,
really.
Islam had to be built up in the meantime. It just took that long. You know, that's all it did. Plus, they had to have NATO to destroy Europe's borders and the European Union to destroy Europe's borders. Okay, so that, all that took a lot of time. All right, but now it's in full bloom. The Islamic war against the white race is in full bloom thanks to the Jews. It's been part of their Illuminati plan all along. But I want to
again, though, Eli, would you say that it's in full bloom? I mean, it is on one side, like it is with the Jews against us.
No,
it's been in full bloom forever. But with us, we don't even know we're at war with them.
Right. No, we haven't started fighting back yet, just barely. But the attack is.
Yeah. So
in other
words, it's almost there. It's almost there.
Yes. The white people are just starting to fight back. Okay. I have there's some really interesting quotations here from The Origins of the Second World War by A.J.P. Taylor, who is, for all intents and purposes, a mainstream historian. Okay? But here is what the Providence Journal has to say about this book. In this deeply disturbing book, A.J.P. Taylor offers a challenging and potentially explosive comment on the Second World War, that the guilt of Adolf Hitler is a myth. With Adolf Eichmann's defense still fresh, with William Shirer's indictment of Hitler in the rise and fall of the Third Reich, and with such reputable authorities as Alan Bullock, he was a world government guy, Hugh Trevor Roper and Elizabeth Wiskeman on record with contradictory views, this opinion is as daring and interesting as it is extraordinary. It is particularly so coming from an Oxford historian who has in previous books held to the established approach. To Taylor, Hitler's guilt is the creation of historians who like systems with which to interpret the unfolding of history. He scorns such historians because he feels they accepted an easy answer to the catastrophe of the Third Reich and Europe rather than probe more deeply. Okay? And A.J.P. Taylor is absolutely right. The blaming World War II on Adolf Hitler is a myth. As we just said, World War II was caused by the Versailles Treaty, which was an entirely Jewish affair. Okay? Whether you accept what we've been saying here, that World War II was planned well before World War I, all right, by the Illuminati, it doesn't matter, because the harsh precepts of the Versailles Treaty led directly to World War II. I think many historians have actually come out and said that. Okay? They just don't know why, and they don't know that the Jews were behind it all. On page 122, he brings up an interesting historical development which no one else has actually brought up before. He says, the Spanish Civil War became the dominating topic in international affairs, and in Great Britain and France, the theme of passionate domestic controversy as well. Why? Well, because you had fascists, which is another word for Republicans, nationalists, okay? Although the word fascist and the word nationalist aren't always identical. In general, they are. In general, fascists tend to be nationalists, okay? But not only, we have what's called international fascism, which is Judaism, which is communism. We have big Jewish-owned corporations combining with revolutionary Jews to overthrow nations. Okay? So when you have a combine between big business and big government, that's fascism. Okay? There's all different kinds of definitions for the word fascism, but Spanish fascism was definitely nationalistic. Absolutely no doubt about it. And why? What happened? Well, the Illuminati attacked Spain with communism, a communist revolution. And Franco defended Spain against these Jewish communists. All right? So, France, Britain, Germany, I think all the other nations of Europe viewed with alarm what was going on in Spain. As we just discussed, they were concerned about communism spreading from the Soviet Union. And we know that the Soviet Union supported these Bolsheviks in Spain. So all the other countries in Europe were starting to worry, hey, this revolution taking place in Spain may spread to our country. We don't want this. Okay? So focus was taken off of Germany and put right on Spain. The great issue of the age between democracy and fascism seemed to be at stake in Spain. This appearance was misleading. The Spanish Republic had never been securely democratic, and it was communist. And as the war went on, naturally fell increasingly under the direction of the communists who controlled the supply of arms. On the other side, the rebels were certainly enemies of democracy. I don't know who he's calling the rebels, the Spanish or the communists, but they were concerned with Spain, not with the fascist international, and Franco, their leader, had no intention of tying Spain to any foreign power or foreign cause. Though he paid Hitler and Mussolini with high-sounding declarations of ideological solidarity, he was a hard bargainer when it came to economic concessions and in strategical matters, made no concessions at all. The rebels won the Civil War he obviously means by the rebels, the Spanish. I would say it was the communists who were the rebels against Spain. The French did not need to move forces to the Pyrenees, despite the talk of their being weakened by a third hostile frontier. The British never needed to be anxious about Gibraltar. Franco proclaimed his neutrality during the Czech crisis of 1938 to Hitler's annoyance. Spain duly remained neutral during the Second World War, except in regard to Russia, and even here the Spanish Blue Division was never more than a moral or immoral gesture. Interesting, now he says, the strange outcome was foreseen by few, and the Spanish Civil War had great international effect while it was being fought. It did much to prevent national unity in Great Britain and France, perhaps the bitterness caused by the electoral victory of the Popular Front, made French unity impossible in any case, but there had been serious efforts towards a true national government in Great Britain after Hitler's reoccupation of the Rhineland. So the Spanish Civil War was such a huge deal that the various nations of Europe were focusing on, well, what do we do? Who do we support? And why? And in every single country, as you and I well know, there were communists and Jews and Freemasons in every country supporting the Bolsheviks in Spain. So there was a civil war was on the brink in virtually every one of these countries. So this was serious. This was serious business, folks. As far as I know, AJP Taylor is the only one who really discusses, you know, the international impact of the Spanish Civil War. So if their eye was taken off of Germany, that's why. That's why. Okay. So Anschluss, we talked about this, the end of Austria. He titles it The End of Austria. Who first raised the storm and launched the march of events? The accepted answer is clear. It was Hitler. The moment of his doing so is also accepted. It was on 5 November 1937. We have a record of the statements which he made that day. It is called the Hossbach Memorandum, after the man who made it. This record is supposed to reveal Hitler's plans. Much play was made with it at Nuremberg, and the editors of the documents on German foreign policy say that, quote, it provides a summary of German foreign policy in 1937 and 1938. It is therefore worth looking at it in detail. Perhaps we shall find in it the explanation of the Second World War, or perhaps we shall find only the source of a legend. That afternoon, Hitler called a conference at the Chancellery. It was attended by Blumberg, the Minister of War, Neurath, the Foreign Minister, Fritsch, the Commander-in-Chief of the Army, Raeder, the Commander-in-Chief of the Navy, and Goering, Commander-in-Chief of the Air Force. Hitler did most of the talking. He began with a general disquisition on Germany's need for Lebensraum, and more space for the German people. He did not specify where this was to be found, probably in Europe somewhere, though he also discussed colonial gains. Well, we know for sure he wanted to regain the Sudetenland and the, part of Prussia that was taken away from Germany. Danzig, okay, the Danzig corridor. And there are
other... that was part of Prussia?
Yeah, well, yes, right. It was between Prussia and Germany proper, okay? It split Germany in half, right? That's how ridiculous that was, okay? He did not specify where this was to be found, probably in Europe, though he may also discuss colonial gains. But gains there must be. Germany had to reckon with two hate-inspired antagonists, Britain and France. Germany's problem could only be solved by means of force, and this was never without attendant risk. When and how was there to be this resort to force? Hitler discussed three cases, and it just goes into, you know, probabilities, okay? And he concludes, Britain almost certainly, and probably France as well, had written off the Czechs and were reconciled to the fact that this question of Germany would be cleared up in due course. In other words, what are they going to do about it? The reality is that the Sudetenland and the Danzig Corridor were German property, illegitimately, illegally taken from Germany and given to other countries, namely Poland, right, and Czechoslovakia. So, if anything, Hitler was right. France and Britain were the real antagonists in putting this horrible situation upon the German people, and the Germans had every right to reclaim territory illegitimately taken from them. So A.J.P. Taylor is saying, oh, no, all these myths made up about Adolf Hitler are false. Blame the, he doesn't use the word stupidity, blame the, incompetence of the politicians in Britain, France, and other countries outside of Germany, like Poland. You know, we discussed Poland being manipulated by the British and by the Soviets in accepting false promises from the Rothschilds. All right? So, if anything, the guys who are finagling, the internationalists who were playing chess with nations, are the ones at fault, not Germany. Okay? That's how I would put it. Okay, over to you.
Well, we already proved that Hitler didn't start this war. He's been accused of starting the war.
Right.
We already know who was... just to recap, that we already know that one of the main reasons that Churchill was put in there is because he had a Jew behind him. He's a Jew himself. But that's the same in America with Woodrow Wilson or FDR or anybody else. There's a Jew in the position, and to keep him in line, they have ways to keep him in line, like you've mentioned with Woodrow Wilson, him cheating, yes, on his wife with a woman.
Right.
But you had the Jew behind him with the focus group that filtered $2 million to keep him beating the war drums to Germany. So the plan for the Hutten plan and all those things I was talking about, Germany Must Perish and What to Do with Germany, the other book that Ursula Haverbeck mentioned, this is the plan to eradicate Germany completely. So they couldn't let them. It's kind of strange that, you know, they didn't let them when they wanted to fold up and say, listen, we're going home. We're not going to fight the war anymore. We don't want any reparations. We know we won. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't let them do that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And then they didn't want to. They tried to do diplomacy. Hitler tried through diplomacy to work with Poland. And
yes,
avoid going back to war because, as I had said before, there was no reason for Germany to go back to war. Germany was on a high.
Right.
I mean, imagine getting the Jew out of your nation. Imagine you're not eating out of garbage pails. And imagine you got your business back that the Jews stole from you. Imagine you got your home back. Right. Imagine that you see smiles on the faces of the people that you haven't seen in years.
Right. Yeah, they're not hungry. They have jobs. They have homes. And Hitler restored order, economic sanity.
And right? Unity. Unity was the key to what you see triumph of the will. I mean, the unity is just staggering, mind staggering. You can't even get two whites to agree today. And they had a whole nation full of Germans, millions of Germans, and people outside their nation that agreed with them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
That is absolutely a miracle. In my view, it's a miracle. So basically, we know who started the war. We know that it's interesting that they wouldn't let them make any other decision. They just kept poking them and poking poking them until they had to go. I mean, you can only take so many pokes before you say, that's it.
Right. Exactly. Germany was prodded by the international Jew until Germany finally had to bite back. Right.
So the people that are promising us peace all the time, the Jews, are the ones that are using the prodding stick. To cause the war.
And aren't they doing this to white America right now and to white Europe, all of Europe right now?
Yes.
They're
bringing
prodding
these
us.
People in here is okay. poking us. Yes, it is.
Okay. What do you think the result is going to be?
What they want is this war you're talking about.
That's right.
See, this is what it's all about. Since they could not bring us, they brought us over there, our Chavez Goy race traitor military, to go over there and do some serious destruction. Okay, mm-hmm. Because they want to clear out the Middle East because Netanyahu and his buddy, whoever that is, I forget his name, but those two are going to restructure the Middle East. They've decided they'll do it. They made that decision for everybody.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Even the people that live there.
Right.
So, basically,
here again,
they're
it's
getting them out
the
of there.
Jews
they got
telling
them out of there.
The Jews telling everybody, we're going to determine your national boundaries for you by force.
Yes, and you will go and you will fight.
Mm-hmm.
You will go kill as many white people as you can.
That's
and
right.
Of course, the white people are the Hitler of that time now. We're being prodded and poked. They're raping the women. They're
Trump
doing this.
Called,
they're doing that.
Trump
we're,
is being
we're
called
very
Hitler.
Patient like our father,
right.
You know, Trump and is, it's getting to the point where we're going to obey the Jew and we're going to kill.
Right. Trump is being called a new Hitler by the libtards while the Islamic fundamentalists are raping women, right? And are creating a supremacist Islamic state wherever they settle. Okay, so these libtards are what they actually hate. They are what they hate. They're so stupid they don't know that they're supporting the exact policies they claim to hate. It just boggles my mind how stupid these libtards are. I just can't believe it. But people can actually be so stupid as not to understand that rape is not a good thing, no matter who does it. Right? But if it's an Islamicist against white women, it must be okay. Right? Talk about rape
to
culture.
To me, it's they're fighting for the have-nots, though. Rape is okay. Unless it's a white man doing
right.
it.
Yeah, right. That's how screwed up
if,
they are.
If it's any other race, it's only because of what the white man has done to them. And
right.
so the white man and the white women deserve that, you understand. I mean, this is convoluted logic.
Oh, it's totally convoluted. Unbelievably
and
convoluted.
And as Archie Bunker would say, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because he didn't know what he was saying when he
right.
said that. So,
well, he had that
what
knucklehead.
It is that you know they're trying to pull this off. The white, I don't believe it. You don't believe it, but there are some white people that believe it.
Yeah, yeah, incredible.
That it's okay for blacks to rape white people. It's okay for them to go light old women,
even
on
even
though
fire these people are white and will ultimately be subject to rape themselves. Isn't this suicidal? Don't they realize they're committing suicide? I guess
what's
not.
What's funny is it does happen to these liberals.
Yeah, it does.
It happens to liberal
and then they
mayors.
Cover it up.
It happens to these women that go over to Africa to try to, go over
save
there.
Save the black
and,
race.
save black people, they end up in pots.
Right, exactly.
After they end up raped and killed and eaten.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt about it. So AJP Taylor is telling his audience that all these myths about Hitler are not to be believed. Hitler did not start World War II. Hitler did not have an expansionist program to try to take over the world. Of course, these are the accusations by the Jews against Hitler. And AJP Taylor is saying, nope, that's not true. All right. And he's.
And it's not true, but it is what, again, it is what the Jews are trying to do, take over the world.
Right.
They're the ones that are trying to institute the one new world order, but they blamed Hitler for doing the same thing and right. called it evil.
Right, exactly.
You see, this is all right out of the Bible in the sense where those who call good evil and call evil good. I mean, this right. is insanity. The whole world falls for this stuff when the Jew tells them it.
Right.
This but they don't see that the Jew is trying to take over the whole world with democracy
right.
and the central banks.
Yes. So this Hossbach memorandum, memorandum has been purveyed in the same way as this final solution mythology has been purveyed. Hitler never said that the final solution was to exterminate Jews. He said the final solution was to send them to Madagascar. Right. And not one shred of evidence has ever been produced that Hitler meant gassing Jews. Not one shred. Yet this is
not
the myth.
Unless he was going to feed them like a huge, the whole nation of Jews in
right.
Madagascar,
to
a
the
big
sharks.
Pot of beans,
right,
and they
to
were
the
going to have gas.
Right, exactly.
Just a joke. Yeah. Anyway, no, really, really what that would have done is it would have exterminated the Jews.
Right.
Because we know that if you put all the Jews on Madagascar and you didn't allow them to get off,
right.
If they cannot have any race to race mix with, the race yeah. will stagger and die.
Yeah, and they wouldn't want to mix with the blacks on Madagascar, right? No, there's no future
for
them.
No, but they might
want
to mix with the monkeys and other things.
Right, right. So he says on page 129, Hitler's exposition was in large part daydreaming. It's not to be taken seriously. Unrelated to what followed in real life. Even if seriously meant, it was not a call to action, at any rate not to the action of a great war. It was a demonstration that a great war would not be necessary. All right? So he's saying...
The Jew doesn't like that talk.
No.
The Jew doesn't like
no.
that talk.
That's why this book, you won't find this book being promoted by the Jews. Despite the preliminary talk about 1943-1945, its solid core was the examination of the chances for peaceful triumphs in 1938, when France would be preoccupied elsewhere. Hitler's listeners remained doubtful. The generals, in other words, Hitler, his strategy was to take advantage of the chaos due to the Spanish Civil War and other things going on in Europe, namely the Great Depression, to peacefully recuperate and recover Germany. But his attempts to do it peacefully were stymied by Britain and Poland, as we found out. Okay? So who's at fault? Obviously, the people who created
Jews
the Versailles
Treaty.
the people who created the Versailles Treaty. The Jews. Thank you very much. All right? Hitler was convinced of Britain's non-participation, and therefore he did not believe in the probability of a belligerent action by France against Germany. There is only one safe conclusion to be drawn from this rambling disquisition. Hitler was gambling on some twist of fortune which would present him with success in foreign affairs, just as a miracle had made him chancellor in 1933. There was no concrete plan, no directive for German policy in 1937 and 1938, or if there were a directive, it was to wait upon events. So this is the most that AJP Taylor will concede on Hitler being a military aggressor and therefore responsible for World War II. This is a very honest book. Very honest book. I'm really happy I started looking into this, as I never suspected that this, not that he's pro-Hitler, okay, but that he's actually giving Hitler a fair historical shot, right?
Will okay? will you say the name of the book for the people again?
Yeah, it's The Origins of the Second World War, by AJP Taylor. Okay.
Very interesting. So, funny how he comes to the same conclusions we do.
That's right.
And we didn't know about his book.
Right, exactly. Right. So, he The speculations about Hitler were irrelevant as well as mistaken. Hitler did not make plans for world conquest or for anything else. He assumed that others would provide opportunities and that he would seize them. In other words, he allowed the politicians of the other countries to make mistakes and take advantage of them. Other opportunities were provided. We must therefore look elsewhere for the man who provided an opportunity which Hitler could take. Whoops, hold on. And who thus gave the first push towards war. He says,
We already know these things.
Well,
it's the things that were going on in Poland. Some of the first things we did where we read to you eyewitness accounts of things that happened at that time to the German people that were in Polish German territory that has now been taken over by Poles through the Versailles Treaty.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the pins and needles. You know, it's like Yahweh. Hitler is a type of Yahweh at that point, and he's hearing cries from his people. What is he to do? Ignore those cries?
Right, exactly.
No, exactly. The cries kept coming because
cries of genocide.
Because the genocide and the things that were taking place in there kept happening. What was he to do? Just ignore it and say, hey, we're having a good time in here in Germany. Yeah, sorry about you people.
Yeah, come over, have some beer and brats, right? Well, his people in Sudetenland and the corridor were being massacred.
Having their eyes poked out.
Having their hands chopped off.
Beatings and all kinds of things.
Yeah, rape, starvation, murder.
It's funny because what's strange about it is that when I talked about that, when we were doing those eyewitness things of those people that was happening in Poland, these are the kinds of things that these Jews put in their fake Holocaust movies.
That's right.
It didn't happen to the Jews. It happened to the Germans.
Yeah, just like the bulldozers moving piles of bodies in the graves. Those were shots taken in Dresden.
It's crazy.
And those were Germans, not Jews, right?
See, this is the power of the media. Amen. This is why they wanted to have control over the media. If you have control over the media, number one, video, when it first came out, it's just super powerful.
Right.
Because it captivates the human condition. You've seen a child, you've probably done it yourself, sat right in front of the TV and you're like, your mouth is dropped open and you're in a mesmerized position. Mm-hmm. Because video is powerful, man.
Oh, man.
And that's why they wanted to have control of this.
Oh, yeah.
So they could put pictures of anything they want and say it was anything they want. And who's going to say no?
Exactly. Well, people were still media naive in those days, right, in the 1930s. What's his name? FDR with his fireside chats, right? They believed every word he said. The guy was nothing but a communist Zionist liar. That's all he was.
We'll have to look into those chats.
I got the cellophane to imitate the crickling fire, right? I should do that.
When I think of fireside chats, I always think of men sitting in wheelchairs next to the fire.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah, FDR. There you go. All right. Well, he blames Chamberlain. You and I blame Churchill.
Chamberlain he was supposedly Hitler had said if Chamberlain stayed in, the war wouldn't happen. Remember that? Remember the quote I read a long time ago?
Yeah.
But he was kind of pro-war as far as some people were concerned too, but he wasn't pro-war enough. That's why that's why they had to get Churchill in. I'd like to know the exact year that all took place and how they got Churchill in. They made sure he was in.
Right. Well, here he says, Neville Chamberlain is an obvious candidate for this position, although I would not put him, I would put Churchill in the place of Chamberlain here as the main architect of World War II, at least leading right up to hostilities. From the moment that he became prime minister in May 1937, he was determined to start something. What exactly? I'm not sure. I don't think he wanted war with Germany. I don't know what he's suggesting here. Of course, he resolved on action in order to prevent war, not to bring it on, but he did not believe that war could be prevented by doing nothing. He detested Baldwin's skeptical, easygoing policy of drift. He had no faith in the hesitant idealism associated with the League of Nations, which Eden half-heartedly put forward. Okay, so Chamberlain understood that the League of Nations was a dead animal. Chamberlain took the lead in pressing for increases in British armaments. At the same time, he resented the waste of money involved and believed it to be unnecessary. The arms race, he was convinced, sprang from misunderstandings between the powers, not from deep-seated rivalries or from the sinister design of one power to dominate the world. Okay, so he was kind of a Reagan. He believed in a strong national defense, but not aggressively like Churchill was. He believed, too, that the dissatisfied powers, and Germany in particular, had legitimate grievances and that these grievances should be met. So he was a reasonable person, unlike Churchill. Okay. He accepted more fully the liberal opinion that Germans were the victims of national injustice, and he had no difficulty in recognizing where this injustice lay. There were 6 million Germans in Austria to whom national reunification was still forbidden by the peace treaties of 1919. 3 million Germans in Czechoslovakia whose wishes had never been consulted. 350,000 people in Danzig, that's just the city, not the corridor itself, who were notoriously German. notorious is a kind of... But I wouldn't use a word like that. Okay.
Well, you know, like, it's like infamous, right?
Yes.
Is that what you mean?
Yes, right. Here was a program for the pacification of Europe. It was devised by Chamberlain, not thrust upon him by Hitler. These ideas were in the air, shared by almost every Englishman who thought about international affairs. Only two groups dissented, which would have to be the communists and the Zionists, right? So, this is a very even-handed history of what went on in those days. And, you know, we talked about Churchill, and when Churchill took over for Chamberlain, that's when World War II became inevitable. It was Churchill's doing. Not Hitler, not Chamberlain, Churchill. Churchill was the guilty party, okay? Because he was nothing but a tool of the Zionists. All right, folks, I hope you're getting the picture. What we're trying to tell you here is that Hitler is not the evil demon of history that the Jews have made him out to be. There are facts that need to be taken into consideration, and Hitler was not the aggressor. He was just trying to undo the injustices of the Versailles Treaty.
And in reality... Since we live in an upside-down world where the Jews proclaim that the heroes, who all these heroes that they proclaim are heroes, are usually people that are low-life scumbags like General Sherman. And the people that they say are evil or that they don't recognize like Calvin Coolidge,
yeah,
those are heroes.
Yeah, or even Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover was a great man compared to FDR.
That's why you never hear about him.
Right. Exactly.
But you know Calvin Coolidge, I told you that he was president for 4 years, and he turned he was turning America around. He was doing like a Donald Trump thing.
Yeah, right.
And they got him out of there.
That's right.
They wouldn't let him stay in for eight. Yeah. See, if you stay in for eight, it's like, you know, the Jews make sure, like Clinton stays in for eight.
Right.
Make sure the Jew Obama Bushes stayed stay in for eight. For eight.
Right.
Make
exactly.
sure Obama, the communist, stays in for eight, right? Make right. sure that FDR, the Jew, stays in for 12
right.
while he died in the third term, right? There is no third term. How did
right.
that happen?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Jews liked Roosevelt so much. They got him. Plus, there was the war and the Great Depression. All that was used as an excuse for him to be reelected when he was the one who caused all of that. Right, and pretended to be the savior of the American people when he was the evil villain. So if you want to talk about villains that set off World War II, you want to talk Churchill, Stalin, and Roosevelt. Those are the three evil geniuses, each one of them with Jewish blood, and each one of them with total devotion to communism and Zionism.
And a Freemason, too.
And a Freemason. Yeah, he was a 33rd degree Freemason.
And yeah. even, you know, like I said, what were the odds of those three being all three being Jews, all three being Freemasons and yeah. all, you know, all that. But then when you have the secondary Truman come in, he's a Jew and a Freemason, too.
That's right. That's right. Yep. All right. So so let's get back into trying to set up the details of World War II and who was really responsible for it. We just found out in these several shows that we've done, and AJP Taylor has bolstered our conclusions that Hitler was not responsible for it. It was other powers. Of course, he doesn't get into Zionism in this book. No mainstream book does.
His last name is Taylor, which kind of worries me a little bit.
But I think he's a bona fide British historian, okay, who takes a contrarian position to the Jewish position. So he would be doing this against his own interests in terms of staying a saleable author, right? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to him after he wrote this book, but this was not a popular book. And a lot of people took him to task for his conclusions. Okay.
Well, if it's not a popular book, it's probably a good book then.
Yeah, there you go.
In other words, if the Jews like it, it's got to be bad. But if the Jews hate it, it's got to be good. There's got to be something good about it, you know?
Yes, yes.
And it stands to reason.
Yeah, yeah. And he departed, as I quoted from the preface there, from the liner notes, he departed from the mainstream view that, you know, Hitler was the goat, right? He said, no, it's all myth. It's all myth, folks, just as we've been telling you. All right, from eyewitnesstohistory.com, Blitzkrieg 1940. The period between Germany's defeat of Poland in October 1939 and her invasion of Norway in April 1940 is often referred to as the Phony War. Not much happened. The French stiffened their defenses while the British moved troops to the continent. The British wanted to send the air force to bomb targets inside of Germany, but were persuaded not to by the French, who feared German reprisal. Yeah, obviously, the British were very far away, and the French were a lot closer to German artillery, right? The major activity consisted of dueling propaganda messages blared from loudspeakers across the German and French lines. At this point, David, all I have to say is that the British and French, it would be the pot calling the kettle black to say that Germany was an aggressor, right?
It's ridiculous.
Yes, it's utterly ridiculous. Okay. The French, feeling secure behind their Maginot Line, were ready to fight World War I all over again, a war of defense. Hitler had other ideas. In order to isolate the iron ore resources of Sweden and secure his northern flank, Hitler invaded Norway and Denmark on April 9th. And we talked about that and the fact that the German troops were actually welcomed by a lot of those people. Okay. Early action. General Erwin Rommel, who would later gain fame in the African desert as the Desert Fox, led the 7th Panzer Division as it crashed through the Belgian defenses into France, skirting the Maginot Line and then smashing it from behind. This was a new kind of warfare integrating tanks, air power, artillery, and motorized infantry into a steel juggernaut, emphasizing speedy movement and maximization of battlefield opportunities. Rommel kept a journal of his experiences. In this excerpt, he describes the action on May 14th as he leads a tank attack against French forces near the Meuse River on the Belgian border. Wait a minute. Okay. Rothenburg, a subordinate tank commander, now drove off through a hollow to the left with the 5 tanks which were to accompany the infantry, thus giving these tanks a lead of 100 to 150 yards. There was no sound of enemy fire. Some 20 to 30 tanks followed up behind. When the commander of the 5 tanks reached the rifle company on the southern edge of the Onhaye Wood, Colonel Rothenburg moved off with his leading tanks along the edge of the wood going west. We had just reached the southwest corner of the wood and were about to cross a low plantation from which we could see the 5 tanks escorting the infantry below us to our left. In front, when suddenly we came under heavy artillery and anti-tank gunfire from the west. Shells landed all around us, and my tank received 2 hits, one after the other, the first on the upper edge of the turret and the second in the periscope. The driver promptly opened the throttle wide and drove straight into the nearest bushes. He had only gone a few yards, however, when the tank slid down a steep slope on the western edge of the wood and finally stopped, canted over on its side. In such a position that the enemy, whose guns were in position about 500 yards away on the edge of the next wood, could not fail to see it. I had been wounded in the right cheek by a small splinter from the shell which had landed in the periscope. It was not serious, though. It bled a great deal. I tried to swing the turret round so as to bring our 37-millimeter gun to bear on the enemy on the opposite wood, but with the heavy slant of the tank, it was immovable. Okay, so this is a nice personal account of the fighting as it began. All right, and the Maginot Line was kept there throughout all of the Weimar Republic days by the French. What were they expecting for those years from 1919 to 1939? Right? They were part of a military occupying force that controlled the German people. That's what they were. A comparison to the Reconstruction, the northern invasion of the South after the Civil War, is apt.
Okay. Notice how it was 20 years exactly, practically.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's the term of time that we were talking about that they would use to prepare their armies to best up the Germans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is how unconfident they were in themselves, inconfident, or however you would say right. that. They had no confidence, so they had to tried to take an advantage over Germany because they had got their tail whipped so badly.
Right, right. Yeah, and then the next article here is France surrenders. This is also Eyewitness to History. And this is more about the tactics of the war. And we've been talking mainly about the politics leading up to the engagement between the Germans. But we talked last time about Germany invading Belgium, where they were actually received by German citizens who lived in Belgium and were welcomed there, okay? And also because the British were planning on using Belgian ports to deliver their war goods. So at that point in time, the Germans were using strategy to win the war. It was obviously the war had begun by this time. And we have demonstrated very, very conclusively that the real culprits were France and Britain, not Germany. Again, for the second time.
Surprised you didn't continue on this article. Didn't you think that was wonderful to hear Rommel say in his own words?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it goes on 2 days later, and he tells you about another account of this. That's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, you rarely hear the German side of anything, right? Okay, so that's why this is good history, folks, all right? And then the next article is France Surrenders, 1940. Hitler unleashes his blitzkrieg invasion of the Low Countries and France with fury on May 10, 1940. Within 3 weeks, a large part of the British force, accompanied by some of the French defenders, is pushed to the English Channel and compelled to abandon the continent at Dunkirk. Dunkirk, ladies and gentlemen, is an absolutely critical point in the campaign, because the entire British force was trapped at Dunkirk, and Hitler chose to let them live. He chose
because he didn't want to kill his own racial brethren. That's
right.
Why.
See this evil Hitler? He could have massacred all these Brits. He could have, but he didn't.
But he had mercy. What happens like with us as white people? We've had mercy and not killed those Jews, right?
Right.
But every chance those Jews have, they kill us. So Hitler had mercy on the English. And there it is again, my talking about how they have a penchant to kill the tribe of Judah, whether they're white Freemasons or Jews over there.
Yeah.
Well, the first chance they get after the war, they kill everyone possible, as many as possible.
Yes. Dunkirk 75th anniversary. I'll give you, a big old ad popped up. I can't read it now. Sorry.
We want all Americans to succeed. But that okay. can't happen in an
That came, there's a bad website, forget it. Why did Hitler let the British get away at Dunkirk? This is another Quora where, you know, individuals answer. The person says, I think the most common opinion about this is that he ordered the troops to stop to demonstrate his authority as supreme commander. What? What? You allow the enemy to get away just as a show of, hey, I'm the boss?
No,
I don't think so.
We need to do a show. The whole show will be about Dunkirk.
Right.
In other words, we need to look into the material. This is just giving you, if you folks out there want to know what we're reading from here, it's www.eyewitnesstohistory.com. www.eyewitnesstohistory.com. Several articles here, and you can see they're very, very well done. I mean, we're reading the words of Rommel. I mean, that to me, that just excites me to no end. You know what I mean? But it's just chock full of stuff. But we will do the Dunkirk thing in its full, you know, so we will get to the bottom of what the story is. I just told you what it really is, though, that he didn't want to go to these wars because he didn't want to kill his racial brethren. He knew that the Jews were pitting them against their racial brethren. Mm-hmm. The rest of the world didn't know that.
Right. Right. Yeah, I'm trying to see if there's an honest answer here. You know, most of this is ridiculous posturing by people. All right, one answer here. He was thinking of a lot of things. First thing you have to remember is Blitzkrieg was a new tactic, and prior to this, tanks were strictly infantry support vehicles, not offensive weapons in their own right. And Hitler, having his roots in the infantry, he thought in conventional ways. Really? Okay. Well, all of his generals told him, let's finish the British off. Every last one of them.
They were probably right, unfortunately.
Yes, they were. Of course they were right. Now, this was one reason Hitler called a halt to the ground event. That's ridiculous.
See, but I can understand Hitler doing that. I mean, in the sense, but I can, you see what happens is there it is. It's our people's mercy that kills us sometimes.
Right.
You see, Yahweh says, kill the Edomites, right. Kill them all off. And people say, well, we'll kill some of them, but we'll keep some of them for their tribute and keep them alive with us. In other words, it's keeping death alive with you so that it ends up killing you. So what happens is the English end up killing and bombing them, so they should have done them in.
Yes, right, right.
It's the same exact scenario. It's our race has a problem. We're merciful like our father.
Right, right. Well, here, by the same person, he says, Hitler also liked the British. He had a soft spot for them, thinking the Brits were the closest thing the Germans had to fellow Aryans. There you go.
Well, supposedly he was trained by MI5.
Right.
Well, you know who was probably trained by MI5 is one of his replacements, like you were talking
right,
about.
Right, right, exactly. All right. And with Chamberlain still in office, Mr. Appeasement, the thought the British might just give up France if offered an olive branch isn't beyond the realm of possibility. That may have been a factor. However, it's very clear that all of his generals advised him to finish the British off and get this over with. The British would have been probably unable to recuperate from a blow like that. It's just.
Well, imagine if they had destroyed their aircraft.
Yes.
Now
right.
the bombing of Dresden is cut right in half.
Right. Yes.
You know.
So yeah.
If you weren't going to kill them, you should have just made sure you went and got rid of all their aircraft.
Right.
Just bombed it all right into the ground.
Yeah, and he didn't even have to kill them. He could have taken them all prisoner. That would have been a humane way of settling the matter. Right.
Yeah, the only problem is that he would have obeyed the Geneva Convention.
Right.
See, when I say that it's our problem, our people's problem, that we're merciful, it's really not a problem But it's a problem when you don't obey Yahweh, when he tells you, listen, this is, there's time for hate, there's time for love, there's time for mercy. Right. But with Jews and haters, there's, you like these people that hate our tribes, you know, hate the Israelites, there's just no time there for mercy. Mm-hmm. It's not the time for mercy. There's a time when it's not time to have mercy.
Right.
That's evident in the Old Testament.
Amen.
And
Amen.
It's evident that when we have mercy on these people, we kind of think, well, if we have mercy on them, they'll have mercy on us. Well, it's just not that way. Mm-hmm. It's not that way.
No, the Jews have no mercy. They're not capable of having mercy. Whenever they
And
have
neither
the
do these English, whatever they are.
Right. Well, they're the libtards of the day, right?
Yeah, I guess
to
so. I guess
Jewish
that's
communist
exactly
propaganda.
What it is.
Right. Okay. Goering wanted to let the Luftwaffe bomb the hell out of him, right? Who was the Desert Fox? He wanted to attack.
Rommel, yeah.
Rommel, okay. So why did Hitler do it? The only explanation is that he showed mercy on these British soldiers, period. That's all it is. Yeah. There is no other explanation.
Now, some people would say, well, he didn't want to win the war. He just wanted to destroy Germans, you see.
Right.
No, this is our people. This is how our people are. He must have just got caught up in the mercy and not thought about the ramification. That, you know, understand, people, that when Yahweh says to kill the women and the children and everything like that, you're thinking how cruel the father is. But you see, he knows that those children will grow up and they will be a problem for you later in life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's the reason why he wanted that done, because these people are destroying Israel all through the Bible.
Right.
And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, Hitler didn't realize the penchant that England had against the tribe of Judah worldwide. Mm-hmm. Maybe he didn't see what we see right now, that they're trying to kill us everywhere we are in the world.
Right, right. Here's a very good comment. This is it's just another question and answer website. Most historians believe that Hitler was racist and treated Britain like his own brother with the same Aryan race. He let Britain escape against his general's advice because he wanted to give Britain a chance to negotiate for peace. Then, after Hitler's Charity Act got no reciprocation of peace from Churchill, by this time Churchill was in power, he realized his mistake of injecting his emotion into war, but he never admitted his errors in front of his generals or in public. At the very
and
least,
he shouldn't have.
Yes. At the very least, this myth that Hitler was an evil monster out to destroy the world and conquer the world is proven false by his refusal to take the British at Dunkirk.
Now, understand that this mistake was made in World War I, and he should have realized that himself, that they were merciful and said, oh, forget about it. This mistake
right.
at Dunkirk is the second mistake, exactly the same thing that happened in World War I. I'm realizing this as I'm talking. In other words, they said they were 2 weeks from winning the war. They could have won the war,
right.
World War I in 2 weeks, and that would have been it. There would have been no Versailles Treaty. There
right.
would have been no reparations. There would have been no Danzig Corridor. There
exactly.
would have been nothing.
Yeah.
But you see, because of our mercy again, because we said, forget about it, we don't even want reparations.
Well, yeah, the
status
quo ante.
We'll just stop this war. We'll all go home, and that's it. We don't want to kill you.
Right.
This is the same mistake. The same mistake made again. So if America finds out that the Jew is the enemy, et cetera, and the England wants to kill America,
right.
we don't let them go next time. Kill them.
The myth of the evil German stands fully exposed as yet another Jewish lie, because the Germans offered France and Germany Britain a status quo ante peace term. You know, we'll just forget that we ever had a war, and we'll just go back to the way things were before the war ever started, shake hands, and declare we made a mistake and stop fighting. That was the peace terms that Germany offered France and Britain.
No reparations either.
No reparation. No demand for reparations. And not a single battle had taken place on German soil.
Now, here they are, and they made the same mistake, and that's where,
right?
That's probably one of the points right there that led to millions and millions and millions of deaths of Germans, especially after the war.
Exactly.
That was a major mistake. That could have cut, if England was cut off at that point, maybe America couldn't have disturbed supply lines of the Germans as well. Going to Russia, it might have, I can't say, but it might have caused that to be to a lesser degree, because England and America were working on cutting off those supply lines to Russia, which is what was killing the Germans, right?
Yeah.
They needed their supplies. And so had England been knocked out of that situation with their aircraft and et cetera, that might have made Americans have to divert more towards that other area. It could have changed the outcome. I don't know. You know, it's pure speculation. But, you know, there's people that are bigger experts, you know, that know exactly everything that happened. But we know that Hitler didn't let Barbarossa. We'll go into that later. He didn't let them retreat, and the generals wanted to retreat. Not for good, just retreat back up and group up, as we were talking about before.
Yeah.
And he would not let them retreat one inch, and that just caused pure death.
Yes, devastation. That really lost the war right then and there. So, I agree. That was not the real Hitler that made that move.
But could be right. It could be one trained by the MI5. Yeah,
right. Yeah,
whatever. Whatever it is.
And Hitler was actually killed in the assassination bomb attempt. Or he was injured and his, he was kept prisoner a la, who was the American flyer? He had the Spruce Goose who was drugged, and he was being, his whole company was taken over by the mafia. He was still alive, but he was being drugged, and he was not making his own decisions. People around him were, okay? Huh. Howard Hughes. It's the same situation.
Oh, really? Is that true?
Yes.
Do you know? Eustace Mullins knew Howard Hughes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, so they had taken over, talk about a hostile takeover, right? They took over his entire company, and people were not allowed to see him, okay, only by previous appointment, and he was on drugs. They kept him drugged up, and he was not making decisions for the company. His handlers were. So I think that's what was really going on after the assassination attempt, you know, the bomb attempt at his bunker. I think that's what really happened.
Okay. That's like a James Bond movie. Remember
it sure
when the
is.
Cowboy, remember the one? You know, I want to say something about that movie, too. Is that Diamonds Are Forever? I'm pretty sure, right?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it is. And they had two homosexuals on there.
Okay.
Mr. Wint. And Mr. something else. It was a long-haired guy.
Mr. Winston Churchill?
Well, they were supposed to, you know, they were homosexual lovers, okay?
Okay.
But they were killers.
Yeah.
And they tried to make these two, likable.
Right.
So
I
think you were talking about the new film there with Beauty and the Beast.
Right.
And I would think, you know, like even Dr. Smith, when you think of Lost in Space, he had kind of
he
thought
was
he was
a nasty
a
guy. He was a nasty guy. He was not a lovable
character.
He was
nasty, but they made him likable, too.
Right.
You know
right,
what I mean?
Exactly.
And that's the technique that they use. My point is this, is that they'll put homosexual characters into these things, and they'll make sure that these are likable characters because they're trying to win the influence over you. That they're likable people and they're all God's children and all that kind of garbage.
Right.
That's See, right. that's how you brainwash the people into it through the media. Yeah. You know what I mean? You get them thinking with these characters that, like, evil characters are often made as somebody that are very likable characters. You'll notice in films and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's the same principle.
Right, yeah. Well, the initial, even though there was a lot of military engagement between the Germans and the Brits and the French and the Poles, there was no attacks on civilians. Okay, these were pure military operations, unlike Churchill, who was the first one to bomb civilian targets. Again, it was not
like
Germany.
Like hospitals, right?
Right, exactly. It was Churchill who ordered the first bombings of civilian targets, not Germany, folks.
And so what do the Jews do in their media in that case? Because I'm just going to reiterate on it again. Mm-hmm. They would say things like the Germans are bombing hospitals in England.
Yeah.
When the English are the ones that are bombing the hospitals.
That's right.
And the Americans are the ones bombing the hospitals. You see, this is the same old tactic. And we fall for it over and over and over again. We, as Japan, Germany, and Italy, the axis of evil, when in reality, there it is. This is, again, the same principle. The axis of evil is the Allies.
Right. Exactly.
Sorry, I don't want it to be that way, but it is that way.
Those who are allied with the Jews.
it's forced allies. You know what I mean?
Yes. Right. Right. So if anybody's to blame for World War II, it's the Jews, and the Jews finagling the Balkanization of Europe, which was bound to create hostilities among ethnic groups and between and among nations. How can you not anticipate that? The Jews knew exactly what they were doing. They were balkanizing Europe in anticipation of another world war.
Yes, and they were making sure they were going to get Germany out of the way, and this was a great way to decimate Christianity. We see that because, you know, the Japanese are not an axis of evil. They're not an evil people any more evil than the Germans were called evil. The Germans weren't an evil people. And Italy weren't evil, unless you're talking about the Jews down in Sicily. But, you know, in Japan, that's not an evil race. That's a race of very, very... I have high respect for the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever Yahweh does with them, that's his business. But they act more like Christians than we are.
Yeah.
And so the proof of the pudding is in the eating when we know that they knocked out all the churches, you know, our side. Okay, let's just put it this way. Our side, we bombed the two Christian cities in Japan.
Right.
So does that prove that we're out to destroy Christianity? While they're saying that Hitler was the one that wanted to destroy Christianity.
Right, exactly.
And it's totally the opposite of that as well. Because when Hitler went into Russia, the Jews, our side again, had destroyed all the churches, turned them into Freemasonic lodges, and busted them down.
Yes.
When the Germans went in there, they built them up on their way through the war. They even had time to build up some churches and help some people on the way in the war.
Right, right.
So, I mean, who is trying to destroy Christianity? It's the Allies.
Right.
Who's trying to build it up and save Christianity from communism?
Yeah.
The evil Axis.
Yeah, and who destroyed Christianity in Germany during the Weimar Republic? Right? The Allies.
I mean, the evidence is everywhere. I mean, what more do you... If you listen to all the shows we've done already, shouldn't that ring alarm bells off in your head, Eli?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Let me go back to A.J.P. Taylor's book, because he really exonerates Hitler at every turn. He's talking about the conference of November 5th, 1937. And just on page 130, why did Hitler hold this conference? This question was not asked at Nuremberg. It has not been asked by historians. Yet surely it is an elementary part of historical discipline to ask of a document not only what is in it, but why it came into existence. The conference of 5 November 1937 was a curious gathering. Only Goering was a Nazi, or National Socialist. The others were old-style conservatives who had remained in office to keep Hitler under control. All of them except Raeder were to be dismissed from their posts within 3 months. Hitler knew that all except Goering were his opponents, and he did not trust Goering much. Why did he reveal his inmost thoughts to men whom he distrusted and whom he was shortly to discharge? This question has an easy answer. He did not reveal his inmost thoughts. There was no crisis in foreign policy to provoke a broad discussion or a sweeping decision, right? The conference was a maneuver in domestic affairs. Here a storm was brewing. The financial genius of Schacht had made rearmament and full employment possible. Okay? And how was this done? By issuing non-Jewish paper credits to German workers, right? I wonder if Schacht did this deliberately or whether, you know, under orders from Hitler. Okay.
Oh, we remember that name from last week. He was right. He's the one that the Jews financed Hitler with,
right?
Through him.
Right, through him.
Yes.
Yes.
He's a traitor, remember? We talked.
Right. Yeah.
He was let off. They let him off. I'm just reminding you from last week. They let him off on the Nuremberg trials.
I can see where the international Jew would finance Hitler to incite another war. Okay? But it's similar with the case of Abraham Lincoln. The Jews incited the Civil War and expecting Hitler to be a push... Lincoln to be a pushover and not have the economic smarts to print his own money. Right? Okay? So the same thing happened with Hitler.
Well, it worked, but it didn't work, okay?
Right.
Yes, it did cause division. Again, here's the word of the year, as far as I'm concerned. They divided the Yankees against the rebels almost forever.
Right.
There'll be a time when we'll finally realize that division. See, there it is again, the Jew weakening the nation.
Exactly.
Because now the Yankees, you go down there and you're a Yankee, you're no good. Remember what happened? And I don't blame them for feeling that way, but see, they don't realize that that division has been cast into them for good.
Right.
And they need to let it go, no matter who's who.
So
I wanted the South to win the war, so I'm not your typical Yankee. I love the people of the South, and I like the people of the North probably less than I like the people of the South.
Well, I used
think
to
they're
feel
kinder
that way.
People.
I used to feel that way, but my deeper research into the motivations of the South have changed my mind. I'm pro Lincoln, but the same situation applies in both cases. The Rothschilds figured that Lincoln and Hitler would be pushovers, easily manipulated, and they would have the war going according to their plans. All right, what they did in both cases was they created a monster that they couldn't control. Okay,
and they didn't get their split that they wanted. They wanted that to split into two so that they could, so now it would be a divided United States. Of course, that's what democracy does anyway, but
that's right.
You know, they were going to have one Rothschild son take over the North and one take over the South.
Right. That's how they were going to do it. Two separate nations. Right. Okay. Just like East Germany and West Germany. Right.
There you go.
After World War II. Okay. So let me complete this sentence. The financial genius of Schacht had made rearmament and full employment possible, but now Schacht was jibbing at further expansion of the armament program. I haven't read this word jibbing. Apparently backtracking.
I think it's gibbing, but well, that's okay.
Okay, apparently backtracking. I guess Schacht, the Rothschilds gave more. That's enough. We don't want you to arm Hitler anymore, okay? That's enough. Okay, Schacht, you can come home now. Hitler feared Schacht and could not answer his financial arguments. He knew only that they were wrong. The Nazi regime could not relax its momentum. Hitler aimed to isolate Schacht from the other conservatives, and he had therefore to win them for a program of increased armaments. His geopolitical exposition had no other purpose. Okay? In other words, it was purely a defensive, if I read him correctly, Taylor correctly, it's just a defensive maneuvers that Germany had to take place because of the constant anti-German sentiments of, by the British and French. It never ended, never ceased since World War I. Never.
There it again. There's your division again. The anti... See, look at it this way. There's anti... anti-feelings. There's divisions between England and Germany. There's divisions between France and Germany. Mm-hmm. And there's divisions between the Polish people and Germany. Yes. So they made sure that they had that going on all around them.
Yes. Yes. He continues, the Hossbach Memorandum itself provides evidence of this, the non-expansionist aims of Hitler. Its last paragraph reads, quote, the second part of the conference was concerned with questions of armament. This, no doubt, was why it had been called. The participants themselves drew this conclusion, not to have an expansive war, but just to protect Germany. After Hitler had left, Raeder complained that the German Navy would be in no strength to face war for years ahead. Blomberg and Goering pulled him into a corner where they explained that the sole objective of the conference was to prod Fritsch into demanding larger arms program. Neurath made no comment at the time. He is said to have grasped the full import of Hitler's wickedness, he says wickedness, some days later, and then to have suffered several severe heart attacks. Okay. Well, I think he's quoting somebody here. I don't think... All this time, he's saying Hitler's maneuvers were entirely justified for self-defense, and now he's saying this is wicked on Hitler's part. So it can't be both, right?
Well, could I say this?
Uh-huh.
I want to show you some fake news from way back.
All right.
This will only take me a second, and you continue.
Yeah.
Because I'm answering your question. This is from that article, Hitler, France Surrenders 1940.
Okay.
It says, Hitler's face is afire with scorn, anger, hate, revenge, and triumph. William Schirrer was
yeah.
a radio reporter for CBS News. Now, think about the name CBS. You see bull.
Right.
You understand? You right. see, you're seeing bull.
Right, communist
news.
Right,
CBS News. Right?
Right, right.
So William Shirer was a radio reporter for CBS News. We join his story as he stands in a clearing in the forest of Compiègne, next to the railroad car where the ceremony will take place. Hitler and his entourage arrive just moments before the ceremony. The time is now 3:18 p.m. Hitler's personal flag is run up on a small standard in the center of the opening. Also in the center is a great granite block which stands some 3 feet above the ground. Hitler, followed by the others, walks over slowly to it, steps up, and reads the inscription engraved in great high letters on that block. Listen to what it says. It says, here on the 11th of November, 1918, 11th,
mm-hmm.
succumbed the criminal pride of the German Empire,
right.
vanquished by the free peoples which it tried to enslave.
What total propaganda.
Now, if that is not fake news and propaganda bull crap,
right?
You're seeing BS. Number one, you see BS from CBS, but now you're hearing BS from CBS.
Yes.
So Hitler reads it and Goering reads it. They all read it. Standing there in the June sun and in the silence, I look for the expression on Hitler's face. I mean, we could go on if you wanted me to read it, but it's amazing that you fake news, it doesn't matter if it's today's CBS, you're still seeing BS.
Mm-hmm.
If it was yesterday's CBS, not you
right.
know, almost 100 years ago now, you know, not quite, 80 years ago, whatever.
Right.
It's still BS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's still fake news.
Right. So exactly. And so is this business about the Mosbach memorandum being Hitler's declaration of war or war plans, right? If anything, AJP Taylor is saying that's more BS. That's more fake news. He kind of concludes here. Basically, after the 5th of November meeting was over, nobody gave it another thought until Goering found the record produced against him at the Nuremberg as evidence of his war guilt. So in other words, this was simply a casual meeting they had to decide, you know, how should we approach war should it come? Okay. And that's all it was. It was not a matter of Hitler's grand plan to take over the world, right? From that moment, it has haunted the corridors of historical research. It is the basis for the view that there is nothing to be discovered about the origins of the Second World War. Hitler, it is claimed, decided on war and planned it in detail on 5 November 1937. Yet the Mosbach memorandum contains no plans of the kind and would never have been supposed to do so unless it had been displayed at Nuremberg. The memorandum tells us what we knew already, that Hitler, like every other German statesman, intended Germany to become the dominant power in Europe, or to at least reestablish itself after being illegally blamed for the war at the Versailles Treaty. It also tells us that he speculated how this might happen. His speculations were mistaken. They bear hardly any relation to the actual outbreak of the war in 1939. A racing tipster who only reached Hitler's level of accuracy would not do well for his clients. So, more fake news.
It's an irony, because it's an irony that the Hitler's trying to stop the Jews from taking the world over with communism. And as a way to demonize Hitler in the process, they're saying that he wants to take over the world. Like I just said, you know, we're repeating, but that's an irony in a sense. You know, in other words, the Jews are never, nobody's seeing that they're the ones that are taking over the world, that they're the ones that are destroying Germany so that nobody will be able to take over the world. So there'll be nobody to defend if they can just kill Germany. There is nobody to defend the world anymore from the Jews taking over the world.
Right. Right.
That's what the last bastion means. It's the last bastion for the world, because America is strong, but it's already under the Jew control with the Federal Reserve Bank. So it's denuded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But Germany's not denuded, you see.
That's right.
Germany, that's right. Especially in Hitler's time, didn't have the central bank. It was probably the only, well, not the only country in the world, but the only viable country in the world to not have the central bank controlling it. And look what happens. It's just amazing.
Yes. One more thing between Chamberlain and Hitler. On page 133, Chamberlain shared with Hitler a taste for doing things himself. He took as his principal advisor on foreign affairs Sir Horace Wilson, a professional conciliator who had made his name in industrial disputes, but he chose Lord Halifax, then Lord President, not through Eden, the foreign secretary. Halifax had a unique gift. He was always at the center of events, yet managed somehow to leave the impression that he was not connected with them. Chamberlain
That's
and every
he's a Freemason.
Yeah, right. He likes doing things on the sly. Chamberlain and everyone else associated with British policy before the war were irredeemably discredited when the crash came in 1940. Halifax, whose responsibility as foreign secretary for most of the time was second only to Chamberlain's, emerged unspotted, and could be seriously put forward by George VI and many others, including the leaders of the Labour Party, as appropriate head of the government of national salvation. It is impossible to explain how this could happen. On 19 November 1937, Halifax met Hitler at Berchtesgaden. It was characteristically an offhand visit. Officially, Halifax was in Germany to see a hunting exhibition at Berlin. Halifax said all that Hitler expected to hear. He praised Nazi Germany, quote, as the bulwark of Europe against Bolshevism.
See? There it is. Mm-hmm. He saw it as it is.
Yeah, right. Okay. Isn't that what World War II was really about?
Well, that's what, if Hitler, like I said, Hitler, if he was able to win this war, that Russia was the key to the whole thing, too.
Yes.
Because if he could have taken care of it there, he would have put the Jews back at least 100 years, yeah. I would think. Yes. Just guesstimating, okay? But also, he would have went into England, as I keep repeating to you, and they knew all the names of the Freemasons there, and they knew all the lodges, and they were going to dismantle the lodges
right.
and put those people to trial.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's keeping England in bondage today, is
that's
the
right.
very thing that he would have taken care of.
Right, exactly. Well, of course, the
that's
Jews
what
and Freemasons.
To point out.
The Jews and Freemasons could not allow that to happen, obviously, right? Of course, there are no
and
such
so
things as Freemasons.
And so that's what he was doing. He wasn't trying to take over England
no.
or take over the world. He was trying to free his brothers.
Right. From the,
I mean, why did Hess go over there? He flew over there to tell them to stop obeying the Jews.
Right. Yeah, the Bolsheviks and the Freemasons. Yeah, of course. Of course, Churchill was the one who had him imprisoned. So he could never address the people he wanted to address. Okay, here again,
people
Churchill.
Say Hess is a Jew. Some people say, but I don't believe it. They wouldn't
no.
have put him in prison for life.
No,
they would have let him go.
They sure would have. They sure would
have. He would have went okay. to the little land of Palestine and hid out or
yeah.
went to South America.
Right. Now, listen to this. He sympathized with past German grievances. Okay? In particular, he pointed to certain questions where possible alterations might be destined to come about with the passage of time. Namely, the grievances that the Germans had with, namely, Danzig, Austria, and Czechoslovakia. So Halifax is confirming all of our concerns. Quote, England was interested to see that any alterations should come through the course of peaceful evolution and that methods should be avoided which might cause far-reaching disturbances. Hitler listened and occasionally rambled. He remained passive according to his usual method, accepting offers from others, not making demands himself. Here, in Halifax's own words, was confirmation of what Hitler had told the generals a fortnight before. England would not seek to maintain the existing settlement in Central Europe. There was a condition attached. The changes must come without a general war. Okay, so Hitler was arguing against a general war. This was exactly what Hitler wanted himself. This is a really great book, folks. Again, this is The Origins of the Second World War by A.J.P. Taylor. He's not correct on everything, but he doesn't demonize Hitler the way everybody else has done. Okay? Halifax's remarks, if they had any practical sense, were an invitation to Hitler to promote German nationalist agitation in Danzig, Czechoslovakia, and Austria. Well, maybe Halifax was setting him up, right, by encouraging and suggesting that the British would not intervene. And that
but you
may
can't
be...
believe anything the British say.
Right, right.
In other words, you just call the British the Jews.
Right, yeah.
Because they tell their own friends, the Poles,
mm-hmm.
that they're going to protect them. And they do the opposite. So nobody can believe a word that England says.
Right, right. Anthony Eden in London told Ribbentrop, quote, people in England recognized that a closer connection between Germany and Austria would have to come about sometime. So they were playing Hitler. You know, on the one hand... They're encouraging him to engage in military industrialization, and on the other hand, they're saying, "Well, Britain and Germany can get along, and that this is inevitable." This reminds me of what happened just before the First Gulf War, where our ambassador to Iraq told the Iraqi ambassador that America would not intervene. Should Iraq try to reclaim territories given away by the British to, I forget what nation it was, the whole...
You can't believe anything America says either.
Right, not when the Jews control it, right?
Nope.
Right? And I forget what country
but
it was.
What about this? Again, to show you the goodness of the Germans. They have a treaty they sign an agreement with the Russians. Uh-huh. Who keeps the agreement? The Germans.
Yeah.
Who doesn't keep the agreement?
Mm-hmm.
Our allies, the good bad guys, don't keep the agreement.
Right. Okay, let's continue here. We have a few more minutes left because this is really good stuff. I mean, this type of history, these conversations, I've never read about this stuff before. Okay. The same news came from France. Papen, on a visit to Paris, was amazed to note that Chotem, the premier, and Bonnet, then finance minister, considered a reorientation of French policy in Central Europe as an entirely open to discussion. They had no objection to a marked extension of German influence in Austria, obtained through evolutionary means, or I suppose that's a pseudonym for peaceful means, nor in Czechoslovakia, on the basis of a reorganization into a nation of nationalities, which is what Wilson's 14 points should have demanded, rather than creation of a Balkanized country like Czechoslovakia. Everything AJP Taylor is saying here is showing the incompetence or the coquettishness of the negotiators in dealing with Germany. They're either setting Hitler up and telling him, okay, there's no war, there's not going to be any war. You can have Sudetenland and Austria and Danzig back because they were illegally taken from you. Okay?
Yeah, so but you're dealing with people that do the Kol Nidre.
That's right. That's right.
So, in other words, you know, that's the answer to why Russia doesn't obey. Or that's the answer why you can't listen to England. These people do the Kol Nidre. And it's okay with their God, which isn't Yahweh, because he would never agree that if you made an agreement and shook hands with somebody, that's null and void.
Yes. Yeah. So you can see the double dealing that was going on. Whenever Hitler or another German emissary was dealing with Brits, French, Poles, and others, because those countries were utterly controlled by Jews and America and the Soviet Union. And as you're saying, only the Germans were up front. Only the Germans didn't use double talk.
And only the Germans could defend the rest of the world from those Jews.
Right. But for Halifax, this statement just blows me away. He praised Nazi Germany as the bulwark of Europe against Bolshevism. That's what Hitler was trying to do, is prevent Europe being taken over by the Bolsheviks. Europe was on his side. The people of Europe were on Hitler's side. When the German army came into Eastern Europe, they were welcoming the German troops because they knew they were being liberated from communism.
Well, this is kind of like what's happening with Putin in Russia and in America. They're actually trying, they know what happened to them now. They know who did it.
Right.
And they're trying to prevent it from happening to us here.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you may not think that's true. A lot of people think Putin's very evil and he's all controlled.
No,
I don't mean
you
personally. I just mean that, you know, it looks to me like Russia wants to prevent us from being destroyed the way they were destroyed. They see it coming here. The people here don't even know it even happened there, never mind is about to take place here with the guillotines and the Noahide laws, et cetera, and trying to take the guns away. So basically, Russia's trying to be like Hitler was and trying to defend us and help us defend ourselves.
Right. Yeah, and the Jews are trying to agitate Trump against Putin. Right?
Yeah, the Jews are now beating the war drums. We need to go and get Russia now. In other words, I hope we realize we're not going to go against our brothers ever again.
Right?
So we're not going to go against our brothers. You go fight them with your Israeli with your Israeli army and navy and see how long you last.
And if Hillary Clinton had been elected, she would have been our version of Winston Churchill, and she would have attacked Russia and Iran already. She
and
stated
so
publicly
would have
that
McCain
she would
if he had got in.
Yes, exactly. So again, the Jewish media always demonizes the people who are trying to maintain the peace. No one can argue after the series that we've done here on the Versailles Treaty that Germany was not justified in reclaiming those territories.
And anybody that goes against Jewish interests are to be demonized and to be killed and bombed into oblivion.
Amen. Amen, folks.
I mean, we don't agree with it, but that's what they think. Anybody right? that goes against Jewish interests in any form or any fashion, you're to be decimated. You're to be
yes.
killed.
If they can get away with demonizing you, they will. And if they can't get away with that, they will arrange for a war to get rid of you. And so they've done that to Germany twice, and now they're trying to do it. They did it to Russia, and now they're trying to do it to America and all of Europe. All right, folks, I hope you're getting an education.
You gotta be rough.
This is
death to the eat of my Jews.
Amen.
Eat of my Jews.
Amen. All right, thank you, Brother David. Thank you, listeners. I hope you realize what's going on in the world today and what needs to be done. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. See you next time.
And he ain't done yet. His younger brother, Dave, quicker than a horned toad. He can hunt down a snake's lie. Then there's Sister Jean. She can whip out a